Hey, Mujer, it's Micaela, host of the Fearless Mujer podcast. What is the Fearless Mujer? It is a space for the mujer who ever felt rejected, misunderstood, and without a seat at the table. If you are ready to renew your mindset, let go of old versions that no longer serve you, and you're ready to be inspired to fearlessly pursue the dreams on your heart, then I invite you for a virtual cup of cafecito. You can listen to the Fearless Mujer on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, and wherever you podcast.
Hi, Scaredy Cats. We hope you guys are having a great day so far. We are your hosts, Sway and Liz. And for those of you who are new here, welcome to our podcast where we talk about true crime, the paranormal, and all other creepy stories. If any of that interests you, make sure to add the Scaredy Cats podcast to your favorites and tune in every Wednesday for a brand new episode. And while you wait for a new episode, you can also follow us on our TikTok page, which is Sway and Liz, where we post daily content. We are super close to hitting 100K. So if you guys would give us a follow, that would literally mean the world to us because that is our goal for this year.
Yes, guys, and we also review the latest scary movies, and if you have any stories you'd like us to talk about, please feel free to send in those topics at our social media pages at Scaredy Cats Podcast, or you can also use the email in the description of this episode.
As you guys read the title and everything, it is going to be about the real life boogeyman. This story is going to be a bit intense, so we just want to give you guys a heads up and let you know that some parts of this story will be a bit graphic. So with all that being said, let's jump into today's story, which is about Albert Fish, the real life boogeyman. Albert Fish was born on May 19, 1870 in Washington, D.C. His parents' names were Randall and Ellen Fish, and he was the youngest out of all five children. Quick fact, Albert wasn't his actual name. When he was born, his parents actually named him Hamilton Howard Fish, but during his teenage years, he changed his name to Albert due to the passing of his younger brother, who his name was Albert. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find about how Albert's brother passed away. I read through many, you know, articles and, you know, watched a lot of videos, and it didn't really speak about his brother. But yeah, that's why he changed his name. But throughout the story, we are just going to call him Albert instead of Hamilton. But sadly, when Albert was 5 years old, his father passed away due to a heart attack. He was around 82 years old. Due to the passing of Randall, Ellen began to become mentally unstable, which is understandable, you know, but I guess it got so bad to the point that she actually started to hallucinate, and due to those circumstances, Albert and his siblings were sent away to an orphanage.
During these times, the orphanages were very bad, and most of the children that were in there would often get beat, assaulted, and mutilated, and other horrible stuff. During Albert's time in the orphanage, he was aggressively beaten by one of the people who worked there in front of all the children, and then he started beating other little kids himself. He enjoyed this so much that he actually loved the feeling that ran through his body, so he said. He also claimed to love the feeling of pain, so he would self-harm himself. Albert would swallow needles and even burn himself with ropes, and during this time he also became very interested in books about criminals, and his behavior started to change. Luckily, Albert's mom, Elle, had gotten herself back on track and was able to get her children back from the orphanage, but at this point the damage was already done for Albert. Ellen described Albert as not only aggressive, but he also seemed to get off on his own self-harm. Rather than feeling pain when he ate needles or stuck them in his own body, he would laugh and get aroused over it. He would also purposely wet his bed and even drink his friend's urine and would...
Sorry guys, this next part, like, we shouldn't be laughing, and no,
it's,
you know,
not
throughout
even supposed to be funny
throughout just... these throughout this story, there's gonna be parts where we start laughing because it's just like so unbelievable what this guy would do, and like we said, it shouldn't be funny, but
it's not like
like
it's just weird.
Would,
like, why
yeah,
meet him?
He would drink his friend's urine and he would ask them to poop so he could eat it, and he was only 10 years old, and that's just like, it's gross, and like, we shouldn't be laughing, but it's just
like freaking
what else
what?
Can we do, you know, like, that is
like,
weird.
It's like an uncomfortable laugh, guys. Yeah. Just think of it that way. It's not like a funny laugh, it's just like, what?
Yeah, it's just so like shocking that
it's
somebody
beyond,
would do that
know.
But like we said, Albert was only 10 or 11 around this time, but if what he was doing before didn't bother you enough, Albert would sneak into bathhouses and hide in rooms to see men doing things to each other. And when he wasn't doing that, he would go to local swimming pools and hide in dressing rooms to see, as he says in quotes, young people without clothes. He also explained that he loved the smell and sounds that, you know, guys would make when, you know, when they were showering and stuff, which is honestly honestly just makes me uncomfortable saying that.
Yeah.
And thinking that a 10 or 11 year old was saying that. But, you know, jumping forward to a few years later when he's now a teenager, Albert got himself a job at a bathhouse. During this time, he was 13 years old and he began, you know, doing sex work. And it's just like I said, it's just really disturbing to me. Everything about this guy that we're going to get into is just weird. But to think that he, you know, he was doing this at a bathhouse, and the owner of the bathhouse, like, wouldn't you say anything or do anything knowing that this 13 year old kid working here? And I mean, if you guys don't know what bathhouses are, it was like homosexual people went back then, and they would like rent out a room and, you know, do all that stuff. So he was still a child doing this stuff. Yeah. Like, it's just, it makes me uncomfortable to think that the person in charge of this place was okay with that.
Yeah.
But Albert would say that he loved doing his job, and he continued doing this work up until his 20s, where he was now living in New York, and he would hang around the docks looking for sailors who were interested in him. He started making a lot of money from these sailors, and that's when he met a man who introduced him to the captain, which his name was John Davis.
And I also want to point out something, because it'll connect to what happens next. So during this time, the Chinese famine was going on, and it went on from 1959 to 1961. And this was one of the dark times in history, because over 30 million people in China died due to starvation, and meat in the United States was actually at an all-time high. Meat was so expensive that parents were trading their babies for meat in order for them not to starve, which is like I honestly can never ever imagine trading my own kid for some meat, you know. Yeah. Like, I'd rather starve than trade my kid. Yeah. Like, that's insane. But
it's crazy how desperate people were during this time.
And it's so sad. But the captain Albert was talking to would bring his boat back and forth from China to New York, and during one of their conversations, the captain began to brag to Albert about his newly acquired taste for human flesh. He even confessed to have taken little kids that were starving in China and dismembered them, cooked them, then ate them. The captain was so evil and sick that he even stated to Albert that the bums of the children was the most delicious meat he had ever tasted. And honestly, guys, even like saying this makes me feel so like sick to my stomach. Yeah. Like, it's, oh my, and I don't know, like, this story is gonna be hard to get through.
Yeah, guys, and this is, it's like actual like stuff written down of what he said. Like, when he was caught, he said these things, and this is what this captain said. But he basically said like he was doing these kids a favor because they were gonna die of starvation, so he would just take them and he eat them himself, which is so like cruel and just
disgusting.
Yeah. And the way he just described it, it's just like if it was just a joke to him, and like his acquired taste was something cool and he was just showing off about it. But after Albert met this guy, things went downhill quickly, because he told the captain that he wanted to try it for himself. So he went into a library and got himself some books on serial killers and cannibalism. And at this time, Albert's mom becomes very concerned for her son, but not about all the disturbing things he was doing. She was more worried about him not getting married. So she ends up finding a girl whose name was Anne Chapman. And, you know, she sets them up to meet together. And surprisingly, things ended up going smoothly. Albert and Anne ended up living together, and he gets himself a job as a house painter, and they would later on have 6 kids. But Albert couldn't keep himself out of trouble though, because he would later end up in jail for committing fraud and other crimes. Albert would then get out of jail, and shortly after is when, you know, he had his first victim in the year of 1910. The victim was 19-year-old Thomas Keaton, who was disabled. It was said that Albert offered to help him move around, but he would end up kidnapping him and took him to a farmhouse where Albert would torture him for 2 weeks. Towards the end of the 2 weeks, Albert then cut off Thomas's private area and he poured alcohol over it. He then kissed Thomas on the forehead and left him $10 before abandoning him in the farmhouse. And nobody knows if Thomas survived or not. I mean, I'm pretty sure he didn't, because he was never found. He never came back to where his parents were. But due to his odd behavior, his wife Anne would later then divorce him and leave Albert, but left the kids. She literally just divorced him and said, "I don't want anything to do with you. You can have the kids. Bye."
That's messed up.
Right?
Yeah.
Being in that position that she was in, you would have to like find something or just have a gut feeling that this dude is up to no good. But then if you do, and she divorced him for his odd behavior, why do you not take the kids?
And if you loved your kids enough, you would have put them through that. And like having that, like, you know, that like what was going through your head, lady.
Yeah.
But the children described Albert as deeply damaged by the divorce, and the way he was coping with it was by eating raw meat. And he even began to feed all the kids raw meat. So this next part is honestly very disturbing. So, you know, if it's too disturbing, like we said, you guys are more than welcome to exit out of the episode, and we do have another one coming out next Wednesday, or you can check out last week's episode. But continuing on, he would then start stabbing himself in the private area with needles, and he would stab.
Guys, like I said, it's so like mind-boggling to think that this actually is true. But like, you know, like we were saying, he would stab himself in his private area with needles, and he would stab him all the way through, leaving him inside his private area. You could even literally look this up. They took these pictures out on the newspaper when they caught him. There's pictures of the x-ray that they had taken of his pelvis area showing all the needles and screws that he had inside of him. But for him, he was sick enough to say that it helped him deal with the loss of his wife.
Come on, man. Like, there's freaking therapy or something. Like, I don't know.
This guy needed help.
He really did. But it's just, like, it's mind-blowing. Like you said, like, even saying this, like, I can't believe a human being would really, like, do this to himself. But he also began to make small tools that helped him torture kids. These so-called instruments included a paddle full of nails, knives, those meat-smashing things, you know, like the meat, pounders, whatever they're called. Like
little hammer-looking things?
Yeah, and lots of other weird stuff he was inventing. Now, jumping to the year of 1914, when Albert met his second wife, they began to live together, and he continued working as a painter, but this time he would paint churches and get commissioned to paint some holy figures at a church in New York. And a couple years into his marriage, his wife ends up divorcing him. And this divorce was different because it had a very bad effect on him, to the point that he started hallucinating. He claimed that inside the churches he worked at, there were voices telling him to commit crimes. And like, for a man like this,
the needles in his private area causing him to hallucinate.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. Like, a man like this to do that, like, it's freaking, like, inhumane. I don't know.
Like, just imagine this, what we say, it was like 1912 or something? 1910, when he started, you know, putting needles in his private area. He didn't get caught until like 1930, 1920, something. So that's like 15,
like
20,
decade later.
20 years with just needles inside of him, poking him, and just, to him, probably wasn't uncomfortable. But imagine that.
Even like continue to go to the bathroom? He must have had some like issues, right? Because like that doesn't even seem like it's possible.
But at the age of 54, Albert began his spree. So on the year of 1924, as 8-year-old Francis McDonald's was playing outside in his yard in Staten Island, New York, his mom noticed that a man was walking up the street. She said that this man was doing like weird jerks with his hands, and he was mumbling stuff. Later on that day, Francis went to go play ball at the park, and he would never come back to his house. And his friend said that he was lured into the woods by an old man with a big gray mustache. They would later run into the woods to look for Francis, and that's when they came across his body hanging from a tree. Investigators later then confirmed that he was assaulted, strangled, and beaten before he was hung. They also said that some limbs were missing from his body. And it was later known that Albert took those home and ate them. After this, there were lots of other men and young boys found dead all over New York. One that began to spark in the media took place on February 27, 1927 in Brooklyn, where a kid named Billy and his friend were last seen in the hallway of his apartment. Eventually, Billy's friend was found on the roof of the apartment building, and it seemed like he was in shock. As reported, the little boy kept whispering it was the boogeyman that took Billy. Police then were called, and almost everyone in the apartment complex gathered together to find Billy, but police would later get a call from a cab saying that they had seen a boy who looked like Billy walking alongside an old man. Sadly, Billy was never found, but when Albert was caught, he explained in great detail what he did to Billy and where he did it at. Albert said that he took Billy to these dumps in New York where he gagged the boy with a rag, and he threw him into a dumpster where he would leave him overnight before coming back the next day, whipping him, and basically just overall beated Billy, and later completely dismembered his body and took pieces of him home for him to eat, which is completely sad. Like, just thinking that this boy, little boy, was just tied up in a dumpster overnight. I just wish somebody had walked by that dumpster and, you know, noticed him there to take him out.
It's so sad, but after all these murders, Albert was never considered a suspect, and nobody even had him in mind. And around this time is when he got his nickname, the Boogeyman. One of his next killings happened when he was around 60 years old. And like, 60 years old, guys.
He was
an old guy!
Not saying like super old, because,
he was a viejito.
Some family members that are 60 years old, but like,
yeah.
He was at that age where, like, I mean, how do you have the strength to do that stuff? Yeah,
right. But he ends up putting a fake job listing on a newspaper where it stated that his name is Frank and he's a farmer who is in need of other farmers, and he listed a few things he would provide along with a decent pay. Albert ends up getting a call from a guy named Edward who is interested in the job, and Albert hires him right away and goes to meet him at the meat district in New York. Edward invites Albert over to his house. He shows up with all these so-called cheeses and meats from his farm, which Albert had no farm, obviously, but the family ends up loving the gifts he brought over, and as he was talking to the family, that's when their 10-year-old daughter, Grace Budd, comes out and says hi. Little Grace was anemic and was often very weak and quiet. She had developed anemia due to lack of nutrition because a lot of people in the meat district area were very poor and didn't get paid well, so at times they didn't have much to eat. But Grace loved Albert, so she started talking to him about school, and she even began to sit in his lap.
But during a point in Grace's conversation about school with Albert, she said that she really doesn't have friends. And keep in mind, guys, this was before Edward even got the job. This was their first time, you know, meeting him. So Albert begins to think all these wicked stuff and decided to come up with a plan to take Grace. So he says, you know what's funny, I have a niece your age and I'm actually heading to her birthday party after I leave. He ends up asking the parents if it's okay if he, you know, takes her to meet his niece, and shockingly they said yes. And this is the part that like makes me mad, I guess, in their perspective. I mean, I wouldn't do this if I was a parent, but I mean, in their perspective, I guess they were poor. They didn't really have food, and you know, they were just grateful that this freaking sick dude was offering their son a job. And I believe that the job included, you know, they were able to come live on the farm, on the house for free. They had food all the time because they worked for Albert. So, you know, I feel like maybe they were just grateful that they were getting an opportunity, and this was like a good step into the future, and they were going to be like secure and have food. So I feel like they're like, yeah, you know, take her, let her meet your family. But obviously that wasn't the plan that this guy had in mind.
Yeah,
but it just makes me mad to think that they had that much confidence on a stranger,
which is sad too. Yeah. But like, yeah, like I get what you mean. Obviously times are different. Maybe yeah. They were just like, okay, like if my daughter feels comfortable around him, maybe we should feel comfortable too. Yeah. Like, who knows what was going through their head.
But Albert ends up taking Grace and says that he would come back and drop her off in about an hour or two. But as the day went by, there wasn't any sign of him. They tried contacting the number that was on the newspaper, but there was no response. And after a while, the family began to grow really concerned. They began to think of, what if Albert and Grace got into a car accident? So they tried contacting the police, but they didn't really do anything that day. So they called again the following morning and began to give them details about Albert and Grace. Unfortunately, they weren't able to find anything because, if you guys remember, Albert introduced himself as Frank Howard, and police had no records of a Frank Howard that lived in Farmingdale. This would become the case that got lots of attention. The media was covering it. There was posters all over the city and in the newspaper. Everyone was like talking about this.
So police began their investigation, but they hardly had any evidence that could help them get a lead. Unfortunately, the only thing police had was some fingerprints and a letter with the suspect's writing that was left behind at the house. Sadly, this case would go cold for over 2 years, until 66-year-old Charles Pope is turned into the police by his wife because she said that she recalls him showing up to the house with a little girl, and it was around the time Grace went missing. Police then look further into Charles Pope, and they see on his record that he had been in jail before for some sexual crimes, so they were convinced that this man was responsible for the disappearance of Grace. So police end up bringing Grace's family in, and they asked him if this is the man that took their daughter. And the family says, in quotes, it sort of looks like him. So after that, they had Charles write a few things down on a piece of paper to see if it would match the letter that Albert had left, but unfortunately, it didn't match at all. They then checked if the fingerprints matched, and also, that didn't either. But police didn't want to take any chances on this guy, so they arrested him and took Charles to trial, which later was dismissed because no evidence linked him to the crime. And get this, his wife even confessed that she had lied about the whole thing in order to get revenge on him for being disloyal. Like, come on, girl, wild. This is something that's freaking serious, and, like, you know, your guy cheated on you, your guy cheated on you, but at the end of the day, this is a girl that went missing. Like, this is way more important for you to be lying about. Like, come on, I would have arrested her if I was on.
But during the time Charles Pope was in jail and on trial, Albert was getting married. His marriage only lasted a week before his wife divorced him. Some reports say that she found him doing, you know, disgusting things to body parts he had preserved from his killings. Others say that she found him writing disturbing letters and sending them to the family of his victims. But shortly after the divorce, Albert would get arrested after many people around New York began reporting these odd letters they had received in the mail. Albert was taken into jail, but later was proven mentally ill, so they transferred him to a mental mental hospital. At this hospital, they could tell that Albert was sexually sadistic, but he knew right from wrong. But 6 years later, in June of 1934, Grace's family receives a letter in the mail from Frank Howard. At this point, Grace was missing for 6 years, but the letter contained details of how he murdered Grace. He claimed to have taken Grace to an empty house in Westchester, where he strangled and cut her into small pieces and ate her remains for the entire week. They reported to this to the police, and the letter goes into investigation. The handwriting matches the letter that was left back in Edward's house in 1928. They also found a fingerprint on the sticker, which came back to match a man named Hamilton Howard Fish. I did forget to mention that Albert at this time was already out of, you know, the mental hospital. He was living in a small New York apartment where he was caught on December 13, 1934 at the age of 64. And while he was in custody, Albert confessed to all of his murders and claimed to have killed over 100 people. He also reported he had set himself a goal to murder children in every single state in the United States, and he said that he accomplished it. Lots of other things Albert said during the interrogation couldn't really be backed up other than the 10 children that he had murdered around the New York area. Sadly, the only remains that were found was the skeleton of Grace Budd, which was later proven to be her due to the match of her dental records. It was also later discovered that Albert had assaulted 400 children and tortured over 100 victims. We weren't able to find much about his children throughout the years up until when he was in trial, where they testified in his defense and said that he was nothing but a good father to them.
But Albert would later then be found guilty and was given the electric chair. As he sat in the death row, it was reported that Albert was so excited to get the electric chair, and when the day came, he cried in joy and said that he was excited to feel a new level of pain they had never felt before. Albert would then die due to the electric chair in Sing Sing Prison on January 16th, 1936.
Some scary facts that I want to talk about real quick is Albert's parents had a 43... Well, I guess this is not scary, but this is more interesting. His parents had a 43-year age difference.
That's a pretty big age difference. That's a big gap. Yeah.
Another thing is that, so I guess back in the day, I did look this up. I guess back in the day, sometimes parents would be so like eager for their daughters to be married that they would write marriage proposals on newspaper ads, basically set them up for marriage. I guess people would do this all the time back in the days, but Albert would reply to these ads with aggressive letters saying what, like, sick stuff that he would do to these people, to the person that was wanting to get married. Like, Jeez. He would go in great detail of what he was going to do to them and all these, like, sick stuff.
That's just freaking weird.
Like, this guy just had so much time on his hand.
It just seems like... He had so much anger, too.
So much anger, and it seemed like he had so much time on his hands on top of him working and doing all this. Like, you really had time to look at newspapers and write these freaking... He would send out large, like, long letters. Mail them out. Like, you literally had time to do that. But Albert was said to target poor people, mainly people of color, because, in quotes, nobody would miss them, and that police officers wouldn't bother to look for these kind of missing people. He also made a stew with Billy's body remains. He called himself a werewolf, and he would eat his victims raw meat on a full moon.
This guy was psycho.
This is where we go back to the stuff that he would, you know, the needles he would put in his private area. It was claimed that, well, it was not claimed, it was reported from the x-ray that 30 needles were inside his private area since the first time he went to jail.
Overall, guys, though, this story had to have been like...
This story was, honestly, out of all the stories, the true crime stories we've done, and
this has to have been the worst.
This was definitely the worst to talk about. It was just like really uncomfortable, and like we said, we shouldn't have been laughing in some points, but it's just so unbelievable to think that this guy did all these things. But we want to thank you guys for joining us today. Don't forget to follow us on all of our pages at the Scaredy Cats Podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with the K. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review letting us know what you loved about it. We would really appreciate it. But without further ado, we are out. Peace.